welcome to Canadian Politics is Boring.
Hello, welcome to Canadian Politics is
Boring. You're recording right now. I'm still recording with now. My microphone. What are you doing?
And Jesse's trying to build a pillow fort around us while we introduce this episode. I'm Rhys Waters. This is Jesse Harley in the middle of building a pillow fort.
I'm trying to, so that I don't get any echo, and you started the episode without me.
I know. What are you doing? We're in it now. Oh, this is fun.
Rhys, what are you doing? It's fun for
behind
you.
Behind the scenes. Here and behind the curtains.
You should see photos of what a, there we go. Okay, I figured it out.
Are you okay? Yeah, hi, Jesse. So. Are you in the episode now?
Yes, I don't know. Hi, hello.
How with are you? Me is the unstoppable Jesse Harley.
Oh, I like that.
Purveyor of pillow forts, avenger of the echoes.
Yep, there you go.
Yeah. Hi.
Hi.
How's it going?
It's going. I'm trying to write a script. It's hard. It's been hard. It's been really difficult.
Well, you know.
No, we tried to make a...
If it was easy, everyone would do it.
We wanted to make a movie. My producer, Chris, and I wanted to make a movie. And so we wrote a script. We talked about it. If you're listening, you probably heard me talk about writing a script a number of episodes ago, which I did. And it worked out pretty well. And then the third wave of the pandemic happened in Nova Scotia. So the movie didn't happen. And then we're like, oh, maybe we can make a movie with like one person in their apartment who shoots on their phone. I'm like, how on earth are we going to do that? So I've been trying racking my brain, trying to come up with a script for that. So that's been fun. That's what I've been doing. How have you been? You sound busy. You sound busier than I do.
I'm very busy. You know, it's good. It's good to be busy, especially at a time when.
Yesterday you scheduled a recording session for today. And then like 10 minutes before we were supposed to record, you sent out an email just rescheduling it for tomorrow. And then a text saying, is that okay? I'm like, oh, sure. And then like just 20 minutes ago, you're like, can you record something now? I'm like, yes.
Sorry.
No, it's fine.
No, it's fine. This is going to be a good episode. It's going to be a good episode. So do you know what? From last week's episode, we had a very urgent email come through.
An urgent email?
So, you know, I was talking about the fact that some people say Nutella instead of Nutella with a soften. They soften the nut. Remember that conversation?
I mean, I don't think I really filed it away as an important conversation, but sure. Yes, I do remember that. Yeah.
It's the kind of stuff that keeps me up at night, Jesse. Anyway, so Dave from Vancouver Island sent us an email.
Hi, Dave from Vancouver Island.
Hi, Dave. So Dave said, and thanks for this, Dave, that... he said, I'm currently listening to your most recent episode and I heard you mention you're confused why someone would pronounce Nutella like Nutella. It confuses me too. But guess what? You and I are wrong. And he sent a link to a news article where actually the Nutella people say it's Nutella.
Really?
He said the rest of the internet and Dave are considering canceling us for that mistake, but he'll keep us posted. So thanks, Dave.
Thanks
for not canceling us yet.
I appreciate that. Yeah.
But also thanks for saying, so I've been saying it wrong. I'm sticking with it. I want to call it to me as Nutella. I'm hardening the nut. If you know what I mean?
Oh God, I try not to. All right.
Yeah. So if you like having a soft nut when you pronounce Nutella, that's your choice. I like my nuts hard.
Okay.
In Nutella.
Yep.
That came out wrong.
No, Rhys, I think it came out just right.
Anyway, do you want to learn about today's episode?
Sure. Bring it on. What you got for us?
Okay. This episode is called Canada in the Vietnam War.
Oh God, it's going to be.
I don't know. I said like that.
Depressing as hell. Why do you keep doing this to me?
Why does it have to be depressing?
I don't know. Why does it have to be depressing? You always send me depressing. Not always.
Vietnam War was horrible.
Yeah,
but I mean, a lot of good music and films came out of it in the decades after, at least.
About how horrible and depressing the war was.
But they were still objectively good films. Just because they were sad and tragic doesn't mean they weren't well put together pieces of art. So.
Yeah, no, I'm not arguing that. I'm saying we have a comedy show.
I know.
People come to us when they want to take a break from the horrors of the world.
Well, I thought this was interesting because I thought Canada had nothing to do with the Vietnam War.
All right. Yeah,
did you? Did you think Canada?
I'm sure. I wasn't. I'm not surprised at all.
Okay. So, officially.
Yep. That's another word. That's another way to pronounce officially.
Officially.
Like Italian Nutella.
It's the wrong way. The Canadian government did not participate in the Vietnam War. That's the official official stance. So Canada did try to mediate between the USA and North Vietnam, trying to get them to be friends again, but didn't.
That's what
work.
We do.
Yeah. So, and one Canadian representative was even involved in secretly exchanging messages between the US and North Vietnam with the approval of the Canadian government. They were the kind of go-between, like passing notes in a class with the board.
I was just going to say, yeah.
Exactly. Right. Jill loves you, or whatever.
Captain, we just received a note from...
from the North Vietnamese general.
Who's
he loves Jill.
if you would like to go on a date with Jill, check yes or no.
Or maybe.
Or maybe.
Two options. So they were basically trying to find a way for the US to honorably leave the conflict. And also they mildly criticized the American war methods. But also Canada exported huge amounts of military supplies and raw materials to the Americans during the Vietnam War, including ammunition, napalm, and Agent Orange.
What? We manufactured and shipped out Agent Orange?
Yeah, the herbicides that were horrible.
Yeah.
If you don't know what Agent Orange is, it's a herbicide and defoliant chemical that was sprayed over large areas that caused essentially... birth defects in children in the following generations.
Oh, it was literally just to spray the crops. I thought it was like mustard, a worse form of mustard gas to like gas enemy troops.
Do you want to know the crazy part?
Well, so it's not like a mustard gas. It's to spray on crops to kill the crops.
It was to kill crops and things. Yeah, but it got in the water system and caused horrible.
Okay, that's pretty bad too. Yeah. All right.
But they just so you know, before they used it in the theater of war in Vietnam, they tested it in New Brunswick.
Of course they did.
Yeah.
Our poor country, man.
Yeah. So essentially near Gagetown, they tested it on a bunch of forests near an air base. So why not?
And did the forests die?
So the Toronto Star reported the records from the 50s, 60s, and 70s show forestry workers often sued at students and junior rangers spent weeks at a time as human markers holding red helium-filled balloons on fishing lines while low-lying planes sprayed toxic herbicides, including an infamous chemical mixture known as Agent Orange, on the brush and the boys below.
Did it have any effect on people?
Doesn't say specifically, but it did...
I keep asking you these questions as if you are this giant fountain of infinite knowledge like previously just researching it before you showed up.
it must be serious because they got a one-time payment of $20,000 off the government. So
each of the people holding the balloons?
Each of the balloon holding balloons.
And that was in the 1950s?
I think it was in the 80s.
Yeah. In the 80s, so I thought you said. Yeah. Okay, I thought you said it was the 50s.
So 500 firms, Canadian firms, sold $2.5 billion worth of war materials to the Pentagon and another $10 billion worth of food, drinks, berries, and boots, as well as copper, nickel, lead, oil, brass, wiring, plate armor, military transport vehicles. So Canadian unemployment, it was such good business for Canada, unemployment fell to 3.9%.
So hold on. On one side of the coin, we have Canada trying to stop the conflict, trying to get people like, hey, let's just be friends. Everyone just put your guns down. And on the other side of the coin, we are providing the states who we shook our fingers at and said, no, we don't like how you're doing this. But here's a bunch of poisonous gas, guns, ammunitions, food. Just keep doing it. Please stop. Like, what? It's like
we want nothing to do with this, but here's all the deadly things. Where's my check? So, and in 1965, Prime Minister Pearson gave a speech in the United States at Temple University, basically asking America to pause bombing North Vietnam. And President Lyndon B. Johnson
What?
The Prime Minister of Canada.
No, I like the first one.
The Prime Minister of Canadian land basically said the U.S. should stop bombing North Korea. And the U.S. President, Lyndon B. Johnson, grabbed him and talked angrily at him for an hour.
What? While grabbing him? Like he just held him in his arms, grabbed him
by his lapels.
And held him by his lapels for an hour.
And talked angrily with him for an hour. But in the end, they turned out, apparently afterwards they were friends. But yeah, Lyndon B. Johnson was a very aggressive, he was one of those people who had like an alpha male persona.
I'd like to do an episode on him. That sounds
He's an American president, we can't, is against the rules.
Okay, but right, yeah.
There's an amazing story where he was president and he was meeting with, I think it was someone senior in the Republican Party, and they were disagreeing, they couldn't come to an agreement, and he invited him over to discuss it, and Lyndon B. Johnson was sat in the toilet having a shit and would only talk to him if he came in to talk to him while he was, and that was his power move. It was like, I'm the president. If you're going to talk to me, we're going to do this right now while I'm busy doing this. And the guy just basically agreed just to be able to leave.
Wow. Okay. So a long line of crazy presidents. Gotcha. Right. That's
exactly. Yeah.
Don't want to break tradition.
Mm-hmm. So, so also the other way that Canada was involved was 30,000 Canadians volunteered to fight. Amongst them, 50 Mohawks from the Kanawaki Reserve near Montreal, and 110 Canadians died in Vietnam, and 7 remain listed as missing in action. There's even a war memorial in Ontario and another one in Quebec for Canadians who died in the Vietnam War. 30,000 people.
30,000 people died or volunteered?
Volunteered.
Okay.
Still, it's a huge amount of people.
That's without the draft. It's just like, oh, wow. Okay. Yeah.
No, they believed in what the American foreign policy was, and they went with it, which is mind blowing. But also, Canada became a huge haven for deserters and draft dodgers in the U.S. So, in 1969, Ottawa announced that immigration officials would not ask immigration applicants of their military status if they showed up at the border seeking permanent residence.
So hold on, say that again.
So if you turned up at the border, say you were avoiding the draft or you deserted
in the
army,
States.
In the States, and you turned up at the Canadian border and right. You said, I need permanent residence, they wouldn't ask you your military status. They're like, they wouldn't go, is this, I was supposed to ask you if this is about Vietnam, but I'm not allowed anymore. So welcome to Canada. So I think it was kind of like they were being like, I think it's a nice thing to do because, you know, to be forced to go to war is a pretty traumatic experience for people if they're.
Canadians are volunteering by the truckload. Like,
well, they should have just done a face swap for every Canadian. So,
right? Yeah.
But apparently, draft evaders, people who avoided even being drafted in the first place, tended to be college educated, middle class, and a bit more well off, whereas deserters tended to be lower income, working class, because they were basically coerced into the military from high school and then wanted to leave after they joined up. So it was almost like it was a big distinction between them. So eventually, there's no direct estimates, but a lot of it seems to be a number of like around 30 to 40,000 deserters and draft evaders eventually ended up in Canada.
Oh, golly, Jesse, I've got some great news. We've had a fresh delivery from the Ad Man.
Gee whiz, Reese, really from the Ad Man?
Smell them, they're fresh.
Ads.
We really could have done a one-for-one swap.
I know, it's crazy.
Those numbers are bizarrely coincidental. That's...
Yeah, exactly. And so in 1971 and 1972, Canada received more immigrants from the United States than any other country.
So like, can you just picture like a draft deserter coming up to the border and you're not allowed asking their military status, but you could like, there's like a secret code sort of thing. You just kind of tap your nose three times and tug on your earlobe and like, oh, okay. So you're one of those guys. And you go into a booth and like, and then out from another booth on the other side of the road comes like someone who looks kind of like you in a wig, right? That's like your doppelganger and just kind of goes back to the States and joins the war effort as you, and you join Canada as them sort of thing. And they've got a wife and kids waiting for you up in Winnipeg and like, hi, honey, I'm home. Oh, who are you? I'm Tom, your husband. And just I'm going, okay, this is...
it's almost like Face Off. Have you seen that film?
I have, yes.
Yeah, yeah, they just swap faces. So Nicolas Cage goes to war instead of John Travolta. Even though their bodies are very different frames, once you swap their faces, they match. Anyway. So also, it wasn't just, but even non-military people moved. So anywhere between 50,000 to 125,000 Americans moved to Canada. And it was the largest politically motivated migration from the United States since the United Empire loyalists because of the American Revolution.
But these people weren't avoiding the draft.
They just didn't like the politics of the time and they wanted to live in Canada instead.
Wow.
And they were actually... anti-draft groups that helped people get into the country. So there was the Vancouver Committee to Aid American War Objectors.
Okay.
Or VACABO. and the Toronto Anti-Draft Program, or TADPA.
TADPA?
Yeah, well, that's not the acronyms. I just tried to make an acronym out of it, but it didn't work. No, they weren't going for an acronym.
What was the first acronym again? VACABO?
V-C-A-A-W-O.
Just rolls off the tongue.
It does. And Mark Satin wrote, who was a counselor on one of the programs, wrote the manual for draft age immigrants to Canada in 1968, and it sold 100,000 copies. And the Canadian singer Gordon Lightfoot, his song "Sit Down, Young Stranger" is all about his acceptance of American draft evaders in Canada.
Oh, that's nice.
Yeah. So draft evaders were who returned to, you know, they were basically, draft evaders were pardoned by Jimmy Carter in 1977, the world's nicest president. half of them stayed in Canada, but half went back without being punished. But deserters were never pardoned.
They're not arrested. No, they couldn't. So, they couldn't have, like, that would be the holding precedent. Then, like, oh, if you want a dessert in the future, you totally can. We'll just slap in the back and come on back. Like, they can't do that.
So somebody called Alan Abney was arrested in 2006, even though deserting. 2006. Yeah, yeah.
Wow.
And then
was he still living in Canada, or did he move back, or?
He was still living in Canada, and I think he crossed the border and was arrested. And then Richard Allen Shields deserted the U.S. Army in Alaska in 1972 after serving a year in Vietnam. And on March 22nd, year 2000, he attempted to drive a lumber truck across the U.S.-Canada border and was arrested and was jailed, but was later discharged.
What year?
That was 2000, so that was 28 years after he deserted.
Oh, my God, man. But they discharged him. They let him go.
They let him go eventually, yeah. But the reaction was, if he tried to cross into the U.S., he was just like, he was doing his job. He was driving trucks, but he was arrested for being a deserter.
Amazing.
He was like, maybe they've forgotten. It was 28 years ago. And he's like, we never forget.
Jesus. No kidding.
That wasn't the only kind of impact on Canada. It wasn't just Americans as well. So after the fall of South Vietnam in April 1975, hundreds of thousands of refugees known as boat people fled Vietnam. And from 1979 to 1980, Canada admitted 60,000 refugees from this wave of people.
Wow.
Who had spent several days in small leaky boats praying, and they were prey to vicious pirate attacks before ended up in squalid camps. So
where was this?
This was people escaping Vietnam.
This
was kind of across the oceans or the seas around Vietnam.
Okay.
Where they were all fleeing. Yeah. So they were essentially refugees.
Canada takes in a lot of refugees, don't we?
Yeah, and Canada took in more than any other nation in the world. So 25% of all newcomers to Canada from 1978 to 1981 were from this kind of wave from South Vietnam. And it essentially, that wave created substantial Vietnamese communities in Montreal, Vancouver, and Toronto mainly.
Ah, cool. Okay. Yeah. Well, that's very neat.
And then because of the consequence of the Vietnam War was Canada decided that it was going to kind of go his own way a lot more from America than it had traditionally in the 50s and the 60s. Socially and politically, it was kind of a point where Canada started to do his own thing a lot more and take a bit of a stand and be his own beast.
Canada, be its own beast?
Canada, be his own beast. Canada, be your own beast.
Yeah, I don't see that as a t-shirt.
Hashtag be your own beast.
I mean, started your own like high intensity gym, that could be your slogan, I could see, but not for...
Be your own beast. Yeah. Canada. So, yeah.
I mean, it's as far as our stories go, I wouldn't call it wild and crazy. I'd call it just like just kind of a sad war story. It's neat.
It's kind of sad, but I find it really interesting how impacted, though, Canada was.
Here you are, Reese. When we started this podcast, you were going to convince me that Canadian politics was anything but boring and interesting.
Well, that wasn't exactly boring.
It wasn't boring, no, but it wasn't wild and crazy. I think you've got me since we've been doing this for like a year and a half. I'm kind of locked in place now. I can't leave. Now you're like, oh, I can tell him whatever I want. I can tell him. I don't care.
It was interesting. That was just interesting. As someone who likes the Cold War period of history out of interest, that was just interesting.
It was
Canada and the Vietnam War.
No, I just wanted to say it was interesting again.
It was interesting. It was a story that was both interesting and full of interest. And I was interested.
All right, well, so thank you for teaching me about the Canadians supplying gas to the Americans while trying to stop war.
And also testing Agent Orange on people in New Brunswick with balloons. I mean, that was come on, that's pretty crazy.
That is kind of nuts. Yeah. I'd like to learn more about that if there's any.
And
survivor.
I don't want to make light of Agent Orange. It was a horrific thing. And so was napalm. Napalm.
Oh, yeah, right. You mentioned napalm. I totally glossed over that.
I glossed over napalm. That's a t-shirt.
We should not make t-shirts based on war stories. Just say.
But napalm's bad too. Don't use it. Or if you've got napalm or Agent Orange around your house, don't use it. That's
right.
My advice.
Yeah, this is our PSA for the day.
Yeah.
Thank you. If you were sitting around looking at your bucket of napalm and your cauldron of Agent Orange, wondering, what should I do with this stuff? Well, you've come to the right place now that you're listening to this podcast. Reese is going to tell you what to do with it. Reese, what do they do with their bucket of napalm and their cauldron of Agent Orange?
Find a reservoir. I'm joking.
Get on a plane. Find a neighbor. Give them a red balloon.
If you have that, I would first of all question why you have it. And the sequence of events that led to you owning both of those things would be very interesting.
Maybe spend a good 10 minutes staring at yourself in the mirror.
Yeah. And then I was going to say call 999, but that's the UK emergency line, so it won't work. So call 911 and just say, hey, I've got something very dangerous I need to give you, and just go from there.
And hope that you don't end up in jail.
Yeah, yeah. You could just make up an elaborate story, just say you woke up and Santa brought it. I don't know.
I was going to say, a hobo, but Santa's much more believable.
It is, yeah. Well, I mean, who are we to decide what he brings from the North Pole?
Right.
So
it's very bad this year. Santa gave me napalm and Agent Orange.
What does that say about how I behaved? What do you want me to do, Santa?
Or you were a very good boy, and that's exactly what you wanted and wished for, and he just
That's a bit of a Santa paradox.
Right?
You were a good boy, but what you asked for was you were a good boy that year, but what you asked for was would allow you to do something terrible the following year. And you go, well, I would need to decide.
I mean, it would be like an alternate scale. Like one year you get napalm, the other year you get coal.
Although essentially, if your plan is you want something terrible to do something terrible, then you're bad and you're back on the naughty list. You get nothing. So maybe it isn't the Santa paradox.
Santa paradox. There we go. Maybe that's the name of our episode. We'll title the episode the Santa Paradox, and people will be pleasantly surprised when they're taught about Vietnam.
Well, if you're studying philosophy in college or you're a philosopher, we've just created a whole new thing called the Santa Paradox.
You're welcome.
So, you know, if you want us to come and lecture and do guests or write a book or something about our theory on the Santa Paradox, then and other Christmas philosophies, I'm sure we can come up with them. This has been fun.
Yay. Vietnam War is always fun.
With a capital F. So
just a capital F U and then a little N.
And a
Yeah. Okay.
So,
definitely been one of our brighter episodes, Reese. That's for sure.
This has been fun. This has been a fun.
Or as you say, it's been interesting.
And the good. So,
yeah. I'm hoping next episode you'll have something a little juicier for me, honestly.
Juicier?
Yeah.
Wow.
It could just be another alcoholic.
Well, actually, do you know what? We should play the trailer for our spy series.
Ooh. Okay.
So, I'm going to press the button. 3, 2, 1.
Canadian spies are boring.
A special season of spy stories in celebration of Canada Day 2021. Join us for 10 daily episodes as we explore the world of espionage in Canada. Season starts July 1st.
So that was our spy series.
I know,
wasn't it? Trailer. And that wasn't it. It's going to be longer than that.
Reese had me sing Canadian Spies Are Boring for like 2 minutes and like 300 different takes, and he didn't use any of them. He just
no, but here's the clip of Jesse trying.
No!
I'm joking. I tell you what, if you spread the word, if you go out and all of you listening, tell 10 people to listen to this show and our downloads grow massively, I will play the clip of Jesse trying to sing next week.
Okay. Oh, yeah. Sure.
Or
sure.
Not, if I remember, we'll see.
Thanks for listening and sticking us in your ear holes just the way you like it. Thanks for listening to Reese educate us about Canada's amazing war economics of selling napalm and Agent Orange, which is what I'm taking out from this episode.
Yeah.
Fascinating. Fascinating. Or interesting.
Should call it napalm and Timbits.
No. That's what? No.
Why?
Napalm filled Timbits?
Oh, that's a new flavor this season. Delicious.
You're welcome, Tim Hortons.
Yeah, no problem. You can have that one for free.
Add it to your Timothy Smith line.
But I'm gonna go home and try and fix my hot water heater because I haven't had a shower in 2 days.
Oh, gross. I'm glad we did this virtually then.
Mm-hmm.
You should be smell glad. Delightful.
I know.
And you've got kids and a dog, so I can only imagine the wonderful perfume and musk your body is naturally producing right now.
Well, do you know what? I made the mistake of grooming my dog before finding out there was no hot water, so I'm covered in hair.
Oh, God, no.
So, yeah.
Oh, wow. I'm okay. Yeah, I
ever met a man whose hands smell of dog permanently? Just don't shake my hand. You just go home later that night. I don't remember petting a dog. You didn't. You shook hands with me. So.
Okay.
I'm going to go now.
Yeah, go shower.
Bye, everyone.
Bye.